episode 417 of the Unpopular Podcast. This is the man, the myth, the legend, Jalen Hunter. Here at the Unpopular Podcast, I'm going to ask you to agree with me. I'm going to ask you to hear me out. For people that are wondering, I went on vacation, went out of the country, thugging with my rounds. I got sunburn. I don't know if you can see it on the YouTube, but I enjoyed myself. I appreciate everyone that asked where I was at. I appreciate everyone that looked at previous episodes, looked at last episodes, looked at clips, but I am back. And it feels good to be back. It feels good to be back. But let's not waste your time. Let's go. What's fascinating about a championship team is, and we've talked about this before on this podcast, but what's fascinating about a championship team is they're are different aspects that makes a championship team a championship team, but there are stark similarities. And I think the beauty in basketball is, again, you can win different ways, but dominance looks like something, and you get to it. Dominance isn't an overnight thing. You have to build towards dominance, and once you get there, it is obvious and it is clear what dominance looks like. What I think is I'm going to talk about, obviously, UConn winning the national championship and South Carolina winning the national championship. What I'm going to start with, obviously, is South Carolina. But what's fascinating to me is how similar both these teams look and how both these teams kind of model a brand of success. A dominant brand of success, might I add. You see, players matter, okay? I'm never going to say that players aren't important. You need players to execute the scheme, execute your game plan. If you don't have good players, you don't have a good team. That's just paramount, you know? Like, that's obvious. Players are extremely important for the success of a team. But what I think is so fascinating about, let's stick with South Carolina, is how important Don Staley is to not only this year's team, but the culture of South Carolina. People are looking at South Carolina now the same way that they looked at Gina Auriemma's UConn, the same way that they looked at Pat Summitt's Tennessee. And there's a reason for that. Obviously, yes. There is a sense of dominance that we're seeing with South Carolina. Dawn Staley winning her third national championship as a coach. Being the first African-American woman to actually win three national championships as a coach. So shouts out to her. But yes, players matter. And yes, you need players to execute your game plan. That's obvious. But when we talk about a culture of winning, one of the underestimated qualities that you need as a coach is you need to be able to build a winning culture. You can be a good, in fact, I will attest, and I will combat anyone that says that a good coach, I think that you cannot be a good coach if you don't build a winning culture. Now, also, I understand that there are some coaches that don't have the players to implement a winning culture, but you can see a winning culture. And you can see a culture that is built off winning. You just don't have the pieces for it. I think that's different. I think if you, it's clear as day that you have the culture, you just don't win because the players might not be up to stuff, maybe because teams around you are better. That's different than having a culture. And what I think Dawn Staley has done is she has brought a winning formula. She has brought a winning culture to South Carolina. Mind you, South Carolina, I'm not saying they were trash, But they really weren't good. They weren't, there wasn't a culture of winning before she got there. And now when you look up, she's won her third national championship since 2017. They're one of the most highly recruited teams on the women's side in the NCAA. When you look, they always have a exceptional pool of players. And I think that is a gift and a curse, if you ask me a little bit. Because it just makes your job that much harder. It makes your job, when you get a Destiny Henderson, when you get a Aaliyah Boston, when you get an Asia Wilson, when you get a Camila Cardoza, they're going to be gone. Now, obviously, with the women's game, they have to stay a little longer due to the rules, but that it just, you constantly have to reinvent yourself. You constantly have to reinvent your team, or your team is going to fall by the wayside. And that is where the winning culture comes in. We don't talk about that much in college basketball. We're going to talk about a coach later on in the show that I don't know if he's a great coach, but I don't know if he brings a winning culture. It might be controversial, but we'll talk about it a little later. But you cannot say that about Dawn Staley and this South Carolina team. Yo, they had an undefeated season. I think they went 38-0. Do you know how tough that is? You know how they say any given Sunday on football? Well, that's exactly how it is in basketball as well. You can lose to anyone. Someone can have a great game and you just don't have it. They had 38 opportunities to lose and they didn't lose once. I think that this goes way beyond congratulations for Dawn Staley and for the South Carolina Gamecocks. Yo, it's been talked about all year, and we saw the peak of it in this tournament. The women's game has surpassed the men's game at least this year. Or you know what? I'll say the last few years. I'm not saying that this is going to be a trend and it's going to continue this way, but a lot of the reason is because of Caitlin Clark, and a lot of reason is because basketball is about storylines. We talked about this last episode, I believe. Basketball is about storylines, and there's more compelling, more intriguing storylines with the women's side than it is the men's. And you also saw a dominant force. I think that's kind of what gets lost in this as well. While yes, Caitlin Clark was incredible, there were some incredible freshmen this year in college basketball, whether we talk about Hannah Hidalgo. You know, there were players that weren't freshmen but were still great, like Paige Beckers. Another freshman was Juju Watkins. You know, there were some great, great players. But there was also that dominant force, and that dominant force was South Carolina. And as we saw, you know what I think it is? You know how people say they don't like dynasties, and you know how people say that they don't like they don't like the Alabamas. You know how Alabama wins a lot of, usually they're amongst the top football teams. It hasn't been that in a few years, but you know how people say that they don't like watching the dominance of Alabama, yet and still the viewership for Alabama games are amongst some of the highest every season in college basketball football? A lot of people say that they don't like a dominant team. They don't like a quote-unquote dynasty. They don't like a team that is just head and shoulders above the rest, yet and still South Carolina was one of the most watched teams all year, one of the most followed teams all year. And they brought that dominance to the national championship and essentially beat out Caitlin Clark and the Iowa Hawkeyes, which, by the way, you know, a lot of people are talking about how great Caitlin Clark is. Well, Iowa is a pretty good team. This is their second year in a row. Unfortunately, they lost, but their second year in a row making the national championship. It's crazy, man. And I think the beauty of it is Dawn Staley in this South Carolina team, while it's easy to hate because, again, a lot of people like to see people lose. But I think that they're also easy to love. Dawn Staley probably is one of the most genuine people, at least, I don't know her personally, obviously, but at least from the outside looking in, she's one of the most genuine people to follow, genuine people to wrap your arms around. And it's not just from the outside looking in. You can see by the recruiting, and you can see by all the former players that just speak glowing of her, and all her current players that speak glowing of her. I'm not ready to say she's amongst the all-time greats, Dawn Staley. But what I will say is, she is well on her way there. She's well on her way to be discussed with the Geno Auriemmas. Even though you may not like her, she's on her way and maybe even surpassed. Well, not, I'm not going to say surpassed because I'm not going to disrespect her resume. But with the Kim Mulkeys, I think she's only lost three games as a head coach of South Carolina, I believe. Or in the last 3 years. Shouts out to the South Carolina Gamecocks for winning this year's national championship in dominant fashion. I have a lot of biases, obviously. Everyone knows I'm a North Carolina fan, and neither one of my teams, both men or women, made it to the national championship, but I also root for everyone that's black. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm not going to mince my words about it. And to see someone, because I understand, as being an African American, I know how tough it is to be accepted in a world that only accepts you for one way. And what I mean by that is, people love to accept black people as the athlete. Like, people love looking at LeBron James, looking at Steph Curry, looking at Asia Wilson, and accepting them for who they are because they're the athlete. But I know that it doesn't matter if you're LeBron James, if you're Tiger Woods, they see you as just the athlete. And it's very hard to venture to hire, you know, to venture to the coaching round, to the front office round, because not only does it seem like your resume doesn't matter as much when you're an athlete, but your rope shrinks considerably because it feels like they wait for the first opportunity for you messing up. And as soon as that, you're out the door. It's very rare that an African American gets second and third chances at being a head coach or being a GM or being, you know, a front office personnel. Very rare. In any sport, basketball, football, there's not too many Mike Tomlins in the NFL. And what I mean by that, there's not too many coaches that can get that long of a tenure at a place. Especially, yes, I understand that Mike Tomlin has, you know, the most winning seasons. But he also only has, one or two national or Super Bowls. That wouldn't cut it in a lot of areas. And on top of that, look how many GMs are African Americans. Not that many. So when I see a genuine woman that is leading a team that is African-American and leading the team to heights that a lot of people would not accept and a lot of people wouldn't expect and a lot of people don't want to see, I'm always going to champion that. And when you look at this South Carolina team, yes, you have the players. You have Cardoza. You have Watson. You have Malaysia. Like, that, you have great players. But South Carolina is a perfect example of culture wins out. When you have a winning culture, and when you have an infectious, contagious winning culture, it doesn't matter who you plug in. You always have a shot for greatness. Again, they lost, I think, 5 starters last year to the WNBA. 5 starters. That is a death sentence for a lot of coaches and a lot of programs, at least the next year. And on top of that, Don Staley and those 5 starters that went to the league, they lost to Caitlin Clark last year in the Final Four. So to come back, and not only, after losing 5 starters, not only go 38-0, but win a national championship and beat Caitlin Clark, you have to tip your hat. And it has to be more than just the players. Again, I'm never going to discount the players. The players are the most important, in my opinion. But you can see a winning culture. And that is exactly what South Carolina is. And that's exactly what Don Staley has brought to South Carolina. So congratulations again. And shouts out to Don Staley. For Don Staley and the South Carolina Gamecocks for winning the 2024 National Championship. Well deserved. Well earned. And an incredible feat to not only win that, but to win that in an undefeated season. Shouts out to you guys. Oh, and before I go on to the men's side, I also want to shout out Caitlin Clark. And Don Staley said it so eloquently, but I'll say it here as well. I'm not. It's not lost on me that one of the main reasons, I'm not even going to say one of them, one of the main reasons why the women's game was so popular this year was because of Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark has transcended how we watch women's college basketball. I'm not taking away from any of the fantastic women that played this year, because that also helped as well, because there were some incredible, incredible players. But Caitlin Clark was the catalyst for the popularity of college basketball. And I agree with Don Staley. She is one of the greats that the college game has ever seen. Not just because of her game, because her game is up there. I mean, she averaged like 31, 32 points a game and 9 assists. I don't think you guys understand how tough it is to average an assist in college. So to average 9 of them is crazy. But she did something that no one has really been able to do successfully. And that is put women's college basketball in a position that overtrumps the men's. I said this before, and to me it was clear as day. I got some pushback, but I don't know how, that Caitlin Clark, at least this year, was the face of college basketball. I can go out on the street and ask 10 random people, do they know who Caitlin Clark is? And I'm sure 7 or 8 of them will say yes. I can ask those same people, do they know who Zach Edey is? And I'm sure about 4 or 5 of them will say yes. She has... she has put such a spotlight on women's college basketball. And because the light is so bright, it trickles down to now people are more in tune with the game as a whole. And if you don't believe me, look at the national championship. I think it peaked at 24 million viewers. To put that into perspective, I think that's the largest watched game, basketball game, I think ever. That means that the national championship went at its peak, I think beat the NBA finals and beat any men or women college national championship. Caitlin Clark, and that's why I love Dawn Staley, what she said. She had an incredible weight on her shoulders, and that is to be the face of something. And not only did she do it, but she did it she did a hell of a job. So shouts out to her, and I'm excited to see, and I hope, I'm not going to say I hope. I'm excited to see her transition from college to the pros. Because I hear a lot of people, both pros and both non-pros, that are saying that she's not going to succeed. But I don't know what the hell basketball you've been watching. But someone that's averaging 30, I'm not going to say she's averaging, she's going to average 32 points a game. But I don't know how the hell you can think someone that averages 32 points ain't going to succeed. That's crazy. But shouts out to Caitlin Clark. Shouts out to the Iowa Hawkeyes. And shouts out to women's college basketball. It has never been in a more beautiful place than it is today. The opportunity of growth is there. Because yes, Caitlin Clark is leaving, but you still have great players that you can put your arms around. I think Paige Beckers has already announced she's coming back for UConn. Juju Watkins, she will be a sophomore next year, at USC, incredible. Hannah Adalgo from Notre Dame, incredible. Women's college basketball is in a beautiful place. And that is no thing, or that there's no greater thanks that should be handed out than to Caitlin Clark and the incredible women that play the game every day. So shouts out to them. I talked about it with South Carolina, and I started this episode by saying that culture is infectious. A winning culture is infectious. And a winning culture, you'd have to be a blind man not to see it. That's why I talked about this, I think, towards the end of the season, maybe in the middle of the season, and I talked about UConn. And I told you guys that this year seems different. I think it's no secret that there was not a great team in college basketball this year outside of one. I think every team had a glaring flaw outside of one. And I talked about that in that video, in that segment, that UConn, it feels different. This feels like those the Dante DiVincenzo, Jalen Brunson, Villanova team, or the Tyler Hansbrough, Danny Green, Harrison Barnes, North Carolina team. It just feels different. Or the Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome, DeAndre Hunter, Virginia team. It just feels different. Dan Hurley has brought a culture to, you know what it is, and this is why I think this UConn team, this is where UConn differs from South Carolina Gamecocks. South Carolina has players that I think could possibly be transcendent, or could possibly be household names in the WNBA moving forward. There are some good players like Donovan Clingan. He's really good, 7 foot tall, a big man. But they don't really have a player that I think can do wonders in the NBA. But what they do have is a winning culture. And that is thanks to Dan. Again, we talked about South Carolina losing, I think, 5 starters last year. UConn lost a bunch of, I think, 3 or 4 starters last year to the NBA or to graduation. And to come back and be dominant. Look, do you understand? This UConn team did not lose a game. The lowest margin of victory that they had in the tournament was 12 points. This team, what that means is you had no shot going into the game. Do you understand how crazy that is? Do you understand do you know how many halves they were up by 20 or more? I think there was 1 or 2 games they were up 30 at half. That is unheard of in college basketball. South Carolina was dumb. They would look. UConn is a perfect example of a team that has displayed a winning culture. And they have knocked it out the park on every phase, with recruiting, with player retention, with quiet as it's kept, this is not going to be a good, this isn't going to be the best draft for the NBA at all this year. There's a lot of players that's on this UConn team that's probably going to go to the draft, maybe 2 or 3 of them actually, but this UConn team and Dan Hurley has got to a point where it would be foolish to underestimate them. I'm not saying that they're going to rattle off 3, 4 straight, but it's no way that you can look at what we saw this year and not think that it was just different. They became the second team since the 2006-2007 Florida Gators to win back-to-back national championships. To put that into perspective, that is, 17 years ago? 17, 18 years ago? No, 14. No, 17. I was right. 17, 18 years ago. And they did it in dominating fashion. This was one of the greatest college basketball teams we have ever seen. When we talk about margin of victory, I think they lost 3 or 4 games, but when we talk about margin of victory in the tournament, this is one of the greatest runs we have ever seen. And this is from a team that lost their best 3 or 4 players last year to either the draft or graduation. And they were dominant. It's about culture. I don't. And the thing that people underestimate about culture, especially a winning culture, is the beauty of a winning culture is you can plug in anybody. I'm not saying that you can plug in anybody and your level of dominance is going to remain the same. Players are important. And you have to have the right players. But what I'm saying is a winning culture can make an average player look great. It's all about the time they put in, and it's all about the time that you put into them. And it just feels different with Dan Hurley, man. Kind of like with Don Staley, you can tell that the players have a different relationship with Dan. It just feels like a, it doesn't even feel like a father-son thing. It feels like a brother thing. And that's very hard to do with a coach because there's always an authoritative view on them. But it just feels different with Dan. Yo, I don't know. It's tough for me to eloquently put how dominant this team was. And, you know, I'll put it in a perfect perspective. There was not one time in this entire tournament, and going into the tournament, there wasn't a time, I don't think, and I'm a North Carolina fan, there was not a time where I thought that there was a team that could beat UConn. Think about that. I am a fan of North Carolina, diehard North Carolina fan. Next time North Carolina is a national championship, I'm going to put my life savings on the line and try to go. That is how much of a fan I am. There was not one time where I thought North or UConn was going to lose. And in the tournament, especially like there was not a time where I thought if they were going to lose, it was going to be probably the largest upset in college basketball history. And that even is, you know, more than when the Houston Cougars, I think, beat Georgetown or something. Or NC State beat Georgetown or whatever it was. I don't think, there was not a team close to UConn. Close. And that is coming from a North Carolina fan. That is looking at what we saw from Houston, what we saw from Duke, which eventually made it to the Final Four, NC State, or the Elite Eight, NC State, like Purdue. There was not a team close to UConn. That, especially in college, is a prime definition of a winning culture. And Quad has kept, again, I don't know if they're going to win it next year. I don't know. But, and honestly, it matters who you lose and who you gain, but I'm almost sure that UConn is going to be in the mix because of the winning culture that Dan Hurley has brought to this UConn team. Mind you, this isn't the first two national championships. They've had, you know, Shabazz Napier, they've had Jeremy Lamb, they've had Rip Hamilton, they've had Ray Allen, they've had Kemba Walker, they've had great players. But this just feels different, and that's no offense to them, the Charlie Villanueva teams, that's no offense to them, Ben Gordon, but I've never seen a team, and this even goes back to the, you know, obviously the UCLA teams was different. I wasn't alive to see those games, but for my lifetime, I'll just say, in my lifetime, I don't think I've ever seen a team as dominant in March than I saw this UConn team. Like, they would, when, you can be up, they can be up 4 points and you thought it was over. Because, and we saw this with the national championship, with against Zach Edey and Purdue, they were up 4 points. The next time you really started to pay attention, like, oh, shoot, they're up 17 points. Like, once they get up, once they get on you, they get on you. It's a wrap. They make, it's kind of like Houston to a certain extent, because when Houston this year, when they were up 3 or 4 points, because their defense was so good, it just felt like that 4 or 5 point lead was more like a 15, 16 point lead. Well, because UConn was a complete team and their offense was so good, that 4 point lead would turn into 17, 18 in a matter of 3 to 4 minutes because of how good they are on both sides of the ball. Winning culture. They don't have a... Yes, Killigan is probably going to the league, but they don't have a star player. And because of that, I think Tristan Newton won the most outstanding player of the tournament. Shouts out to him. Well deserved. But this UConn team is going to be here for a while because of the winning culture that Dan Hurley has brought. So shouts out to the UConn Huskies for being the first team since the 06-07 Florida Gators that had a myriad of NBA players like Al Horford, like Joakim Noah, like Chandler Parsons. This UConn team became the second team or the first team since that Florida team to win back-to-back national championships. So shouts out to you guys. Much, much, much deserved. And honestly, about halfway through the season, it looked like a foregone conclusion that there was no team. Like, UConn was head and shoulders above the rest. Shouts out to you guys. I talked about the draft, and I talked about how this isn't going to be the best draft this year for the men's side. And a person's name that obviously has been spiraling when we talk about, is he going to be drafted? Well, not actually. Let me back up. We all know Zach Edey is going to be drafted. The conversation around Zach Edey is, will he succeed in the NBA? Will he succeed outside of college basketball? Now, this is the same Zach Edey that obviously just played for a national championship. I think he had like 37 in the national championship. He was going crazy. He also won back-to-back player of the years this year. So we're not talking about some scrub. We're talking about the nation's best player in college basketball. I think Zach Edey is a perfect example of the difference between college basketball and the NBA. Perfect example. Let me first say, I think Zach Edey can play in the league. I think Zach Edey can be like a Andre Drummond type player when we talk about his rebounding, when we talk about maybe like a Rudy Gobert as well with his defense. I think he has the capability of doing that. Some things need to change in his game, but I do think that he has that capability. And as we see, Andre Drummond, I know it's not a popular thing to say because a lot of casuals don't know much about Andre Drummond, but Andre Drummond is one of the greatest rebounders the NBA has ever seen. When you look at his rebounding total, when you look at his rebounding percentage, he is one of the greatest rebounders of all time. And I know he's easy to hate and he's easy to crack on, but Rudy Gobert is one of the best rim protectors of all time. I mean, I think he's about to win his third or fourth defensive player of the year this year. Like, you can't win that much or that award that much and not be good at your job. Like, come on. So I do think that when you look at the hype, when you look at the capabilities, I think that Zach Edey can be that type of player. I think the question is, and people haven't really put this question into his right perspective or right tier. The question is, can Zach Edey do well in the NBA? The question is Zach Edey's intangibles, is Zach Edey's skill good enough to be a high draft pick or good enough to be a cornerstone for a team? Because when you're a number one through five or number one through 10, when you're a lottery pick, you're looked at as being a potential cornerstone for a team. Because quiet as is kept, if you're a top tier talent, you're going to a lower franchise. So the question is, can Zach Edey last in the league? Can he play in the NBA? I think for sure, to be that tall and to be the National Player of the Year 2 years in a row, of course you can be playing the NBA. The question is, does his skill set warrant a lottery pick? And that is, I think is where the conversation should lie. And it goes back to the point where I said that that's the difference between college basketball and the NBA. Zach Edey was by far the best college basketball player in the nation. But the NBA is where you see, is where you're going to see a lot of his shortcomings, I'll say. Obviously, this is a much lower case and a much lower player. And no offense to him, but one of the reasons, I talked about this before, I talked about Armando Bacot. And I talked about one of the reasons, one of the things that frustrate me about watching his game is his game, he remained the same from his freshman year to his last year at North Carolina. He was always a great rebounder. He was always a big body. He was always able to, you know, locate the ball. He was one of the best rebounders, and he was one of the best paint presence in college basketball his entire career. The thing is, he never, it felt like watching him, he never developed his game past what it was. While that is not exactly the same for Zach Edey, what Zach Edey has not done is developed his game to a point that can translate better for the NBA, and that is his offense. All of Zach Edey's offensive skill, offensive repertoire is close to the rim. He uses his size to perfection, and he's able to get easy touches and easy points at the rim. That's what makes Zach Edey so dominant. No one can stop him, at least in college basketball, once he gets to the rim. The issue and the one thing that you can, or one thing that you can do to stop Zach Edey is keep him away from the rim. Make him a shooter, because that is one thing he is not, is a jump shot or jump shooter. Not from mid-range. Like, he may attempt it, but that's not his game. And he turns into a much lower class player once you make him or get him further and further from the rim. Well, if we look at the NBA game, the reason why Rudy Gobert is so successful is because you have shooters around him, but there's still a cap on Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert is one of the best defenders we've seen, at least rim protectors, that we've seen in the league. I think Zach Edey has that capability, but I don't know if he'll get there. I think Andre Drummond, who can't score that much, you know, it's kind of like Zach Edey, can't really score away from the rim. He's one of the best rebounders we've ever seen. Well, I don't know. I think Zach Edey can get there because of his height and his size, but I don't know if he will. I think what's helping Zach Edey, and I think what will help Zach Edey and what will secure his place as a lottery pick is he's a good player. He's a talented player. His college resume speaks for itself. But this is a weak draft. Very weak. One of the weakest in a while. And because of that, there isn't much options outside of, you know, one or two. Like, yeah, you can go. Yeah, you can go overseas. You can go to Ignite. You can look at maybe someone like a Dalton Kincaid. But are they that much better than Zach Edey? Or is their resume that much better than what Zach Edey has produced? I don't know. So, to answer the question directly, I don't think Zach Edey, I think you can develop. I think that he can develop into a pretty good player. You know, I think if he devotes himself to learning, to developing a jump shot and developing more of a shooter's touch. Oh, I'm not saying you have to be a three-point shooter. No one's saying that. I understand that this is more of a three-point shooting league at this point. But not every big has to be a three-point shooter. I think that Zach Edey will be incredible for the game. I think that he can, because he is gifted with some God-given abilities that a lot of people don't, he will be able to succeed in his role. The thing is, I don't think his role is big enough to be a cornerstone or centerpiece for a team. Like, I don't think if you dropped Zach Edey on the Hornets, they'd be that much better. If you dropped Zach Edey on the Wizards, they'd be that much better. Now, and that's what's probably going to hurt him. He's not going to go to a good team because I think that when you talk about his size and his dominance, maybe Zach Edey on the Golden State Warriors would be great, but I don't think that he'll still be there when Golden State drafts, you know? So I think if he devotes himself or devotes the summer to developing that jump shot, developing that jump shot, he has a chance to be a really, really good player. I'm not saying he's Victor Wembanyama, but he has a chance to be better than a Rudy Gobert, because that's one thing Rudy Gobert never was able to develop was a jump shot. But what I will say is, if this Zach Edey that we're getting is the same that we're going to get in the league, he's good enough to be in the league, but he's not good enough to be. I think he'll be a lottery pick just by default because this is such a weak draft. That's just honestly what it is. But I'm not going to say he can't play in the league, that a guy that just dropped 37 on a dominant UConn team and won his second straight player of the year. It would be foolish for me to think that he couldn't do something in the NBA. That'd be crazy. So, but again, that Zach Edey is a prime example of the stark difference in talent-wise from the NBA and college. It's crazy. Speaking of draft, something that I wanted to touch on. We just talked about Zach Edey. Another name that kind of turned heads with his draft decision was Bronny James. Bronny James electing to enter his name into the draft. Now, yes, he's pretty much keeping his NCAA eligibility just in case he doesn't get drafted or just in case he doesn't like what he sees, which I think is smart. There should be no one on this planet that watched any USC games last year that featured Bronny James and think that he is ready for the NBA. Now, let me mince my words and say this. I think that he has NBA intangibles. I think that he can be a really good defender. I think that he can be a really, he can be a 3-and-D type player right now. But if he does get drafted, and if he does forego next season completely and, you know, continues or remains in the NBA draft and he gets drafted, it is solely based off his name. And to me, that would be the biggest disservice for his career. There are times when the best thing for a player's career is to go back to college. I mean, Bronny James and the USC Trojans had an injury-laden season. The man averaged 4 points a game this year. Do you think someone that averaged 4 points a game should be in the NBA right now? No. Again, I think he has NBA intangibles. And I think that, especially when we talk about his defense, I think that he could go to the NBA. Let me say that. I think he could go to the NBA this year. But I think he's not ready. It kind of goes back to some of those Duke, Kentucky teams where you'll have a player that is good enough to go to the NBA, but you know, perfect example, Trevor Duval. People remember Trevor Duval? Trevor Duval from Duke, one of the top recruited high school players, was pretty good for Duke. But everyone knew, yo, you probably should stay a year or stay a year or two, maybe three, but you should definitely stay another year. What did Trevor Duval do? Trevor Duval was a one and done. Went to the league after 1 year, even though it was clear as day that he should more than likely stay for another year in college. One and done. I promise you, you can't name me, or you can't tell me where Trevor Duval is right now. Again, he was one of the most highly recruited basketball players from high school ever. But again, there's a difference between high school and college basketball, just like there's a difference between college basketball and the NBA. I think Bronny James has the opportunity to be an incredible NBA player. Maybe not his father, but I do think that he has the opportunity to be an incredible basketball player. I just think he needs more time to develop in college. Now, again, this can all be for naught. I mean, he can say, hey, I'm coming back to school. Cool. And I think that's a smart decision. But I think the worst thing that he can do right now is go to the league. Right now. Because he, watching USC games, he's not ready. I think Gilbert Arenas says something that a lot of people, it went over a lot of people's head, but I think is a perfect example of why he's not ready. Outside of talent, because, I mean, you need to be talented to get to the NBA. I'm not saying that Bronny James isn't talented. But outside of talent, there's a characteristic that every basketball player that is in the NBA has, and that is a killer instinct. And that is the belief that you are the best player. I'm sure every NBA player believes that they're the best basketball player in the world. Whether you believe it or not, it doesn't matter what you believe. That's what they believe. And Gilbert Arenas says something, and I've heard other people, other coaches say something, that Bronny James hasn't developed that yet. The key word in that is yet. Because I think if Bronny James develops that and is able to nurture and grow that killer instinct, which is what you get from playing more competitive basketball, i.e. in college, then I think he has a much better shot than he does right now. Gilbert Arenas said it most, like, there's times when he just coasts, or there's times when he's okay with being the second option on a team. Like, no, bro. You're, no. Again, I'm speaking from somebody from the outside looking in, but it doesn't, I think that would be the worst case, the worst decision that he can make right now, Bronny James, and that is to go to the league right now. And what's unfortunate is I know that someone would possibly draft him, because we know the stories and the rumors that whoever drafts Bronny James likely will get LeBron James, because we've heard LeBron James been very public and very vocal about wanting to play with his son and wanting to be the first father-son duo ever in the NBA. So there's going to be a team that's like, hey, if I can get Bronny James, we don't really care about Bronny James too much as much as we care about getting LeBron James. That, to me, completely destroys his growth. Because if you're drafting him for somebody else, that means that you're not putting in the time to develop him like you should. I don't think LeBron or Bronny James or LeBron James Jr. was actually his name. I don't think that Bronny James is ready to be drafted. I don't think he should be drafted. I don't think any tape that you saw last year would say to you, or this year would say to yourself, he is ready for to be an important piece in the NBA team. I think it would benefit him greatly to just go back to school. And again, I think he has intangibles that could translate to the NBA game, but I think that the ceiling would be much higher for him if he goes back to school. That's just me. But we'll see. We talked about championship culture. And we talked about Dawn Staley and how she brought a championship culture to South Carolina Gamecocks. And we talked about Dan Hurley and how he brought a championship culture to UConn. How both of these now are powerhouses, mostly because of both Dan and Dawn. And it hit me once I heard the news about John Calipari going from Kentucky to now Arizona, the Arizona Razorbacks. I think he signed a 5-year deal to be Arkansas, to be the Arkansas's new head coach, the Razorbacks. Compiling this episode, being on break, being on vacation, and watching that, or watching the news, it hit me. John Calipari is the perfect example to what I'm talking about. How there's a difference between bringing a championship caliber culture and not. I think when people hear that, they think that you can't be successful, you can't have a good culture if it's not a championship culture, and that's not true. There's levels to it. I don't think John Calipari has, There's no way that you can have 47 draft picks come through your school. You coached 47 draft picks and not have a winning culture. No way, shape, or form. I think John Calipari currently is one of the most winningest coaches in college basketball history. But what I think John Calipari has not brought is a championship caliber culture. There's no way that you can have 47 draft picks from Kentucky alone, I believe. 47 draft picks from Kentucky alone, not including Memphis. And only have one national championship. That's been my issue. That's been my issue with John Calipari this entire time. I couldn't really put my finger on it. I didn't know how to put it into words, but I got it now. My issue with John Calipari is simple. You've had the talent, you just have not had the culture. You've had a winning culture, but you haven't had a championship caliber culture. And maybe that was not the case, or maybe that wasn't the goal. When you hear John Calipari's interviews, the goal is to get these players to the league. I very rarely hear him say the goal is national championship. So maybe in that sense, I'm not going to say he doesn't care about national championship, but that's not number one on his brain, and that's cool. Maybe that's just my expectations. My expectation is when you have that much talent and you're in a competitive sport, your goal should be to be at the mountaintop of that sport. And the only way to be at the mountaintop of that sport is to win national championships. And again, I talked about this when I talked about John Calipari when they lost to Oakland. When you have that, different programs come with different expectations. And I think I'm starting to understand that the expectation that Kentucky possibly had wasn't necessarily the expectation that John Calipari had. Because I think the expectation with Kentucky is obviously championships. They want national championships. They get one of the they have one of the top recruiting classes year after year after year in their eyes, and they have one of the most loyal fan bases in their eyes. That should lead to a championship. But I think in John Calipari's eyes, it's no. My goal is to get these kids to the next level. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, Dan Hurley or Don Staley or championship level coaches, they don't care about none of that. No, I don't think that's at all. But I think that's John Calipari's main focus is let me get you to the next level. So maybe I've had more expectations than he's had for his experience. Maybe, I mean, okay. I've accepted what I mean, it's biblical, you know, accept the things that you cannot change. I don't know this man from a can of paint, but I do know that, and it hit me, man, like a ton of bricks, like, yo, maybe John Calipari never really cared about national championships, and that's okay. Because almost every interview he said, my goal is to get these kids to the next level, and he's done that. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons why he's one of the best recruiters in the nation, one of the best college recruiters ever. Because that's his goal. His goal is like, yo, I don't really care about this national championship thing. I care about getting you to the next level. That's how you're able to get Terrence Jones, Julius Randle, Tyrese Maxey, Malik Monk, De'Aaron Fox, Tyler Herro, Bam Adebayo, just to name a few. Well, And I think he's going to succeed in Arkansas. I think the same. I mean, I look at it like this, man. One of the biggest reasons why it's always funny to me when people expect players that have been in the league 10, 15 years to automatically change is because when you've been doing something for so long and it's brought you the success that you're looking for or it's brought you success, why do you think they're going to change? That's like Steph Curry. That's like expecting Steph Curry next season to turn into Patrick Beverley on the defensive side of the ball. It's not going to happen. That's like Draymond, you expecting Draymond Green to turn into Klay Thompson shooting the ball. It's not going to happen. That is not what has garnished the success for Draymond Green. So why would you think that's, you know, people get so upset with Russell Westbrook because he didn't work in a lot of areas. Well, yeah, you're getting the same Russell Westbrook that worked for him his entire career. So why do you think he's going to now turn into a spot-up shooter? Like, it's not going to happen. I don't think Arkansas should now be on championship watch with John Calipari now. I don't think that. Again, with all the talent that he's had, he only has one national championship. But what I do think is, you should expect Arkansas to be one of the hot, most recruited teams, or one of the, you know, they should have a very high recruiting class because of John Calipari. I think that you should now expect more kids from Arkansas to go to the league because he's there. And I do think they're going to be an incredible team, or he's going to have incredible teams. I just don't think that. I'll say this, I wouldn't expect a national championship from John Calipari because he couldn't get it done in Memphis. He only got it done once in Kentucky. I don't know what you think is going to change in Arkansas. But I will say that congratulations to John Calipari for becoming Arkansas's next head coach. I was pretty shocked. I mean, when you look at When you think, even though he did coach at Memphis, when you think of Kentucky, you think of John Calipari. Just like when you think of Duke, you think of Coach K. When you think of North Carolina, at least recently, you think of Roy Williams. When you think of Kansas, you think of Bill Self. When you think of Kentucky, you thought of, you know, the first thing. And I mean that over when you think of these schools, you think of the coaches over the players. Like, when I think of Kansas, I think of Bill Self before I think about Andrew Wiggins, before I think about Joel Embiid, before I think about, you know, Wilt Chamberlain. When I think of Duke, I think of Coach K before I think about a Kyrie Irving or a Jay Will or Zion Williamson or Jason Tatum. When I think of North Carolina, I think of Roy Williams before I think of Michael Jordan, before I think of Tyler Hansbrough, before I think of Ty Lawson, you know. When I think of Kentucky, even though they've had a bunch of players, I think of John Calipari, and he's kind of been cemented as my first thought when we think of Kentucky. So seeing him not be at Kentucky is definitely going to be different for me. But, you know, shouts out to him for going from Kentucky to now Arkansas and being their new head coach. Shouts out. Let's talk about wrestling for a second. As we know, every sport has their magnum opus. The NBA is obviously NBA Finals. Football, the NFL is the Super Bowl. Hell, even golf has the Masters. You know, you have the tennis has the Australian Open. They have the French Open. They have the U.S. Open. Every, you know, the baseball has, or the MLB has the World Series. every sport has its magnum opus. And for wrestling, it is WrestleMania. And what I think this happened a few years ago, or it started a few years ago. I think the most brilliant thing that the wrestling could have done, and wrestling has done for themselves, is make WrestleMania, I think, two nights. I'm not the biggest wrestling fan anymore. I've talked about this ad nauseum. I used to be a huge wrestling fan growing up. I mean, again, I was a big Rock, Stone Cold, Undertaker, Jeff Hardy, Triple H back in the day. Like that was, you know, I was a WWF kid. So I haven't really followed wrestling like that for a while. Even though I do know names, like I know John Cena, I know Roman Reigns, I know Seth Rollins, I know Cody Rhodes. Like I know names. I just haven't followed it. But one thing that was shocking to me, and shocking in a good way, is how many people were talking or was talking about WrestleMania. How many people that wouldn't even classify themselves as wrestling fans was talking about WrestleMania and was talking about it with excitement. You know, a lot of people were excited. The Rock came back and, you know, you were talking about wrestling does storylines really well. And they were talking about, you know, Roman Reigns, I think, being the longest tenured WWE champion or longest tenured United champion or something like that in WWE history. I think over 1,300 days he was a champion. Cody Rhodes storyline. Like, WrestleMania has done, when we talk about the big games, you know, I think that obviously in the United States, Super Bowl is number one. But I honestly think that WrestleMania does it better than most, you know, most other sports, and that is including basketball. I understand that the NBA and most of the almost every other sport, their last game is the big game, and then they go on a break. Outside of wrestling, you know, you have WrestleMania these two nights, and the next night, I think that Monday night is like Raw or something. So wrestling keeps going, but the way that they promote it, the way that the storylines go, the way that they make it such a spectacle, it's second to none, man. Shouts out to everyone that went. Shouts out to everyone that participated. I mean, I know The Undertaker came back. I know The Rock. I think, again, Cody Rhodes beat Roman Reigns. It's incredible, man. R-Truth, I think. And I know R-Truth is old as hell, man, because he was kind of there towards the ending of me watching wrestling. R-Truth, I think, won the tag team champion or something like that. Hey, bro. Wrestling is doing a great job. And shouts, I think Triple H is now the GM and president of it. He's doing a great job at promoting it. And he's doing a great job at putting on the show. I know they had, you know, influencers like iShowSpeed or something, or Speed was there. Hey, man, they're doing an incredible job, man. Shouts out to WrestleMania. Again, WrestleMania, as a person that doesn't watch wrestling anymore, I understand how big WrestleMania is. And they've done a beautiful job at promoting themselves. They've done a beautiful job at just being there and just being the talk of the, again, this WrestleMania happened in the middle of the national championships. Like on the same weekend as the men's and women's national championships. And while, yes, the women's was probably the talk of it, talk of the weekend, probably number two was wrestling and WrestleMania. Oh, hold up. Side note, bro. Oh, my gosh. With all this praise I'm giving, you know what? I'll say it now. With all this praise I'm giving the NCAA and March Madness or whatever. I understand catering to whatever coast you're on. I get it. Like, the men's championship was played, I think, in Arizona. So, obviously, you would want to cater to Arizonians. You know, you want to cater to the West Coast audience, seeing as though you're there. But I think you're doing yourself such a disservice on both sides. Because I've been doing nothing but praising the NCAA on the women's side all season. You're doing yourself a disservice having the game for the women's side. Why is it 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday? Again, you're not really competing with, because this is your end game. You're not competing with the NBA. You're not competing with the NFL. Why is your game not prime time? On top of that, the national championship's at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon when the final four games is like 7 and 9. They did an incredible job for the women's side broadcasting it. When you have Elle Duncan, when you have Andrea Carter, when you have Janaea Bumake, when you have Ryan Russo, when you have Holly Rowe, they had an incredible team, you know, calling the games. And they were, the way that they covered it was spectacular. I just don't understand why you have it at 3 o'clock in the morning, or not 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, yes, I understand that you peaked at like 24 million, but I'm almost sure you would have had that same 24 million if you would have put it at prime time. You may even got more. Like, why is the game not at 6 or 7? And for the men's side, why, again, I understand that you're catering to your West Coast audience, but in what way, shape, or form do you think it's smart to have a national championship on the East Coast start at 9:20? And you're already not the, you're on a Monday, by the way, and you're not already, your ratings this year were not that they used to be, obviously, and your ratings have kind of dwarfed or been dwarfed by the women's side of March Madness. Why in God's name are you starting so late? Why can't the national championship start at 7? Like, what I'm saying is, man, just do better. Just do better. Just do better. Hell, the WrestleMania is a weekend event that's on pay-per-view and still got more buzz than the men's championship. And it's I think WrestleMania, at least day one, is like all day. And people were still more excited. Again, there's a lot of people I saw that didn't even watch the game because it's on a Monday. It ain't like a national holiday. It's a Monday at 9:20 p.m. The game didn't go off till like 12:10. Like, come on, bro. But shout out to WrestleMania. Oh, man. Lastly, before we go, people are asking me about it, so I'll talk about it. This is the unpopular topic of the day because I'm going to give my unfiltered and unpopular opinion about this J. Cole thing. I think the reason why a lot of people have been asking me about this because they know my affinity for J. Cole. They know that J. Cole is probably one of my favorite rappers of all time. Let me just get this out of the way now. When we talk about the whole big three, which now obviously for a lot of people is in question, I think that J. Cole is the best rapper out of all three, and that is obviously J. Cole, Kendrick Lamar, and Drake. I think that J. Cole is the best rapper out of all of them. I think that Kendrick Lamar makes the best albums. When we talk about Dan, when we talk about Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers, when we talk about Good Kid, Mad City, I think that Kendrick Lamar makes the best albums out of the all three. I think Drake makes the best hits. You know, when we talk about Hotline Bling, when we talk about some of the hits that he's had, you know, God's Plan, I think he's the best hit maker. So that is where I stand with the whole quote unquote big three. But a lot of people are now questioning the whole big three is because a lot of people heard the shots that Kendrick Lamar sent towards Drake and J. Cole on Metro Boomin's album, We Don't Trust You, on the song Like That. Was an incredible shot, was an incredible song, was an incredible album for Metro Boomin and Future. And Kendrick Lamar came in like, boy, yeah. Now, most of the diss was about Drake. There's obviously been a long-standing feud between Kendrick Lamar and Drake. But he also threw some subliminals, some light shots at J. Cole. Well, J. Cole dropped a surprise album over the weekend called Might Delete Later. I am a huge fan of the project. I haven't really been able to stop listening to the project. I am a big fan of J. Cole. I love the project. The end, or the last song in the project, was 7-Minute Drill, which was pretty much J. Cole's response to Kendrick Lamar. Sending, you know, a bunch of subliminals, sending a bunch of warning shots, which he said. But the biggest controversy around this is Dreamville was also this weekend. And J. Cole went on Dreamville and essentially apologized to Kendrick Lamar for dropping 7-Minute Drill, which set social media ablaze. I understand both sides of this coin. I understand the people that are extremely upset, and I understand the people that understand what J. Cole's doing or did. This is a sports podcast, and one thing that makes sports unique from anything else is the level of competition, is the level of competitive nature that goes into sports. Well, in some veins, music, is, especially talking about rap and hip-hop, there is a level of competition as well when you talk about diss tracks, when you talk about, you know, people gunning for to be the top dog. There's always going to be a level of competition because essentially being high up on the pedestal or being as famous and as popular as you can is essentially what extends your career and essentially what puts food on your table. And there has been a, you know, there's been a quote unquote big three this entire time, which has been J. Cole, Drake, and Kendrick. Those are the three biggest names that have been in the rap industry. So, you know, when we talk about rap beef, when we talk about disses and verbal combat, I understand, especially people of older ilk, people that, you know, were alive and were around to see Nas versus Jay-Z, to see Benny Siegel versus Jadakiss, to see, you know, Jay-Z versus Ja Rule. I understand why they'll be upset and they may look at J. Cole differently. And just be like, yo, we understand that, you know, there is a big three, and for the longest, it's been, you know, Drake and Kendrick going back and forth, but it really hasn't been J. Cole. So the one time that J. Cole was thrusted into it, while you do respond, and that even caused some type of controversy and some type of back and forth that some people liked it, some people didn't, you apologizing essentially in their eyes makes it look like, oh, you're weak and you're not ready for this. You don't want that quote unquote proverbial smoke. You are not battle tested, and you essentially ran from Kendrick Lamar. I understand people's thought process, and now there's a lot of people that look at J. Cole differently. And while there is a level of entertainment to it, there are people that are saying that J. Cole is now not part of the big three anymore because of him apologizing. That essentially means you quote unquote lost, or you've exited out of the big three conversation. Then I also understand the people that are saying, well, J. Cole was the bigger person. First and foremost, Like That, which was the song that Kendrick Lamar was on, that was the most of them bars. 98% of those bars were for Drake. Those 2% were for J. Cole, but Kendrick was mostly shooting at Drake. On top of that, there's been a longstanding understanding that J. Cole and Kendrick Lamar are close. Now, yes, I understand that, and Kendrick understands that this is also a sport. He wants to be the best at it. There is a relationship there, and J. Cole has never really been the one to be, you know, the diss type rapper. He's always just been the best rapper. And he even came out and said that it didn't really sit right with his spirit, which is why he apologized. I understand. I mean, at the end of the day, you do what's best for you. Here's my feelings towards the whole thing, man. I think that what I have loved to see a verbal back and forth between J. Cole and Kendrick, yes. I think that there's always, especially when you love sports as much as I do, and you also view hip-hop and rap as a sport in some cases, I would love to see two of the top people go, or I would love to see all three go at it. You know, I would love to see J. Cole going at Kendrick. I would love to see Drake going at Kendrick. I would love to see Kendrick going at J. Cole. I would love to see Kendrick going at Drake. Outside of Drake and Kendrick, between J. Cole and Kendrick, I don't think that there's any love lost, but it is a sport, and it would be fun to see. And it doesn't take away how I'm not looking at J. Cole differently, because, hey, you're still a rapper. And a lot of people were just talking about the 7-Minute Drill, which was the song on Might Delete Later, but that entire project was incredible to me. So, yes, I would love to see it back and forth, but J. Cole made that decision, and he went on his platform, which was his festival, and apologized. Like, hey, if that's what you want, it's what you want to do. I mean, now I may not look at J. Cole in the same light as far as a battle rapper or whatever, but if we're still talking about rap, I still think J. Cole is the best rapper out of all three of them. And I still have a plethora of songs, a plethora of features that J. Cole has been on to justify how I feel. So I'm not looking at J. Cole no differently. I may look at the situation like, damn, Jay, like, I wish I would have seen that. But I'm not going to be like, all right, well, now J. Cole's trash. I hate J. Cole. J. Cole isn't part of Big Three. I don't know another rapper. Again, there's some great rappers out there. I don't know another rapper that can rap better than J. Cole right now. So, and I'm still anticipating the fall off. So, I don't think it was weak. I wasn't expecting it, don't get me wrong. And I was like, wow, I mean, I wouldn't have done that. But that's what J. Cole did. And it's still, J. Cole is still the best rapper in the game to me. And if you want to say, all right, J. Cole's out the big three, well, who are you putting in? Who? It really shows, I think this really shows how many people care more about the quote-unquote combat than they do the lyricism. Because I think that, you know, okay, well, it does, I guess you can say it makes you look weak, but then you like, well, wait, that's still J. Cole. Okay. I wouldn't have done it again, but I'm not J. Cole, and I can't rap like J. Cole. So, and I don't think that this means maybe in a rap beef or whatever. But then again, I think J. Cole also understands. I don't think that there's a beef between him and Kendrick. And I think that's what people are kind of missing. Like, they want to see that back and forth. And yeah, it would have been great to see that back and forth. But I don't think that there's a beef between Kendrick and J. Cole. Now, if Drake came out and apologized, or Kendrick came out and apologized to Drake, knowing the long feud that they've had, that would be a much different opinion of mine. But you're going at someone that, and that's one thing that he said, man. When you're beefing with somebody, when you're dissing somebody, there has to be a level of hate there. Not saying that you have to hate that person, but there has to be a level of hate. There has to be a level of vitriol to be able to say some of the things about this person that you can say. I don't think there's a beef between J. Cole and Kendrick. So I think that that makes the diss and that makes the quote unquote rap battle much difficult, much more difficult for someone like J. Cole, who has majority of his career been on this, you know, positivity wave or whatever, which is good for him. So again, if I think if there was real outstanding issues between them, not only would you not get a apology from J. Cole, I think you'd get a little more than a little jab. But hey, I think that, you know, you're dissing a friend. And I essentially, again, we're just talking about J. Cole's perspective. I'm not talking about Kendrick's perspective, you know. And again, if you go back to like that, 98% of that verse was about Drake. And because J. Cole was on First Person Shooter, which kind of is the stem of that out or that verse, a couple shots went to J. Cole. So yeah, I wouldn't have done it, but I still look at J. Cole, one, as a top three. There's still a top three, Drake, Kendrick, and J. Cole. And I still think that J. Cole is the best rapper out of all three. Yeah. Oh, and I was a fan of To Pimp a Butterfly. I'm not saying it was Kendrick's best album, but I did enjoy it. I enjoyed it, you know. So there you have it. Again, I appreciate you guys for sticking with me. I'm back from my vacation. And yeah, be ready to get episodes like usual and reels and everything like usual. But yeah. But there you have it. That's been today's episode of the Unpopular Podcast. I truly, truly appreciate you guys. If you want an Unpopular Podcast shirt, hoodie, sweater, long sleeve, joggers, the link is in the description below. I have multiple different colors, multiple different designs. Get your Unpopular Podcast merch today. Also, please subscribe to the YouTube channel. Again, I'm back, so usually how I post, you know, videos, reels, obviously whole episodes, they're going to be coming back. Tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend if you like the content. Subscribe. It definitely means a lot. Also, subscribe to the DSPs. I understand that some of my listeners or some of my followers, I guess you can say, only listen and some only watch me on YouTube. So, and both of you guys are extremely important. So if you listen on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on SoundCloud, any DSP, wherever you listen, please follow, please subscribe. It definitely means a lot. Also, please follow the socials. Follow Instagram, follow TikTok. Again, the reels, the videos, everything will be coming back now. I took a week off and now I'm back. So to get exclusive content, I guess you can say, to get longer reels, because the reels that I put on YouTube can only be a minute. So usually those reels that I put on YouTube are longer on social media, whether that's TikTok or Instagram. So follow, you know, if you want to see the entire reel of my entire thought process, follow that. That's probably where you can get to me as far as comment. We can debate. That's probably the quickest way to get to me is the social media. So follow. It definitely means a lot. Until next time, much love.
Oh, man, you stayed to the end of the video. I appreciate you. If you like what you saw, be sure to hit that subscribe button so you'll never miss any content from your boy. You can also go back and watch past episodes, past clips, and don't forget that the Unpopular Podcast, new episodes drop every Wednesday and Saturday. Appreciate you.